Raising Playful Tots, show number 106. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad you could stop by today. My name is Melissa. Welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids so that we can introduce a new play idea. If you are new to the show, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room over here as we make Olympic bento snacks, thanks to J. Daniel Fall's mum. And you can find those at jdanielfallsmum.com. Last week's show, I shared an interview with Dr. Laura Markham about emotional intelligence. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at www.raisingplayfultots.com/shows. Usually once a month there's a show that's just me and no interview. I hope you'll stick around. Thanks. I'll be right back after this short break. You can listen to Raising Playful Tots while you're on the move by choosing Stitcher. Stitcher is a free app available for your smartphone. Downloading this app is really quick and easy. Enter TOTS, that's T-O-T-S, during registration to be entered to win in their monthly draw. Then you'll receive the latest episode right there waiting for you of Raising Playful Tots. Not just that, but you can discover hundreds of other popular new shows. You can find all of this by visiting stitcher.com/tots. That's stitcher.com/tots. When you're in the thick of things, you don't get many chances to catch breath. You know, really reflect on what you're doing and where you want to go. Anyway, if you do, you know it's forward with your head down and perhaps being better. It's not always a helpful way of progressing. We try not to look at others, yet we need to keep a sense of proportion. We can totally be culturally insular and not consider what our parents have done before us, what their parents did before them, and we may totally ignore other forms of parenting style from people that are just on our doorstep because we don't know very much about how they do it and what that they actually do. However, every now and again, something comes around that lets us look at ourselves from the long view. What we're doing now and how it will impact the future. Often it's blown up to extreme proportions if you remember the outcry that came with Tiger Mum. The message and the ideas behind the whole concept or the book that the Tiger Mum had written seemed to get lost amongst the hysteria of people rushing to identify or distance themselves from her. And yet, during that parenting style, there will be some aspects that must have pricked us for us to be so anxious to distance ourselves or feel an affinity with her. I first heard about this particular subject I'm going to talk about today while listening to the Manic Mummies. They were talking, I think it was on show number 310, about a Boston Globe article, or maybe it was an LA Times article. Since then, I've read another article in the New Yorker called Spoiled Rotten by Elizabeth Colbert. If you've got a chance, I've linked to both of those articles in the show notes at raisingplayfultots.com/106. So nip on over there and have a read if you've not already read either of those articles. They're both talking about an anthropological survey of a group of middle-class parents in LA. I was genuinely interested in what they were talking about. Never mind whether I identified myself as middle class or whether I was a parent that happened to be in LA, I knew that there would be interesting takeaways from both of those places, and so it really interested me to see what they had to say, particularly because this talks to all of us, because parenting is something that we all do, and it's something that we can get really defensive about because we feel that we're always doing the right thing. It can be really tricky to see another style that's being done without wanting to just critique it. So I really wanted to try and open my eyes and see what are they doing, some of the good things that they're doing, and some of the things that maybe I could improve on myself. So to me, this is one of those moments when you have that kind of out-of-body experience. I don't know really how to explain it other than to say it's a bit like that Matrix moment when you just stand in the middle there and you get to see things as they really are, a moment suspended in time. You get to see what other people are doing and really think, is this what they really want or what they were expecting? And in turn, you get to reflect on yourself and think, is this where I'm heading and what I'm doing? And do I really want to be heading in that direction? And am I heading in that direction without even realizing it? That's why I love it when people write in that have been there before us and share with us things that they have learnt. Because when you're in the middle of things like we are right now in the middle of parenting, sometimes we can't see really clearly and we need to have that experience of those other people around us that have been before us that can give us that clarity, that can open our eyes to other things that we just haven't noticed because we're so keen on what we're doing right now. So after reading both articles and having a real think about it and seeing some of the debates online and people's input, I was struck with how we need to have a good plan. Not just a plan, but a good plan. So here it is. I've come up with 7 ways we can raise playful tots who'll be functioning members of the household. Now, you'll understand more about that title if you've had a look at the articles, and I really don't want to spoil too much of the articles for you by telling you too much about them. So I really encourage you, if you've not joined in this discussion, to jump into it now and have a look at these articles. But in the meantime, here are 7 ways that we can raise playful tots who'll be functioning members of the household. Number 1, time. Allow for more time. It's easy for us to do some of the activities that we do around the house because we've always done them. We understand how it works. We've got our shortcuts. We know the quickest way to do that. But when we're teaching our little souls, when they're learning, when we're sharing with them, we should allow for a lot more time. And this is probably one of the most underestimated things that we do, yet one of the easiest things that we can do. I like to think of doubling the time that we would want to spend on it than usual. And this way it helps them not to feel derailed. Because if we try and squeeze in a little activity in a tiny amount of time, we can find that we can't get it done, and that leads to our frustration and our that might turn into anger and all sorts of things and confrontation. And what was meant to be pleasant and interesting actually just doesn't end up being that way at all. It's also hard for the little guys. They can feel the tension, and while they can't always understand what's going on, they get cross as well because they have their frustration. So it's easier said than done, but I would say it's better to try and let them join in and do activities with you. One great way of doing this is to use a piece of Apple theory that I've talked about on the blog over at play-activities.com, and I'll link to that in the show notes. This is where you don't usually feed a child a whole apple by giving them an apple. Often you start with giving them a piece of the apple that they eat. They can digest that, It doesn't look like a huge task. They learn how to do that. And then eventually they go on to eating more of the apple. Number one, time. Allow for more time so that you can get activities done so that children can feel part of the household. Number two, when we're actually showing them what to do, are we really showing them and sharing how to do it? So number two is show, watch, repeat. It took us ages and ages to learn how to walk. We probably don't remember it, but if we look at our children, and especially the older siblings that we have, we probably can see now how many bumps that they did, the amount of times that they attempt to do it. They're trying and trying all the time. Sometimes with commentary from us, sometimes without, and they're trying all by themselves and they keep going. This is something that we should remember when we're showing them how to do an activity. This is a great training ground for the kids. It doesn't mean that it has to be a regime, but being able to show them how to do things is a skill that we have to really take the time to do, which feeds into number one, which is time and allowing more time. Show them and invite them to watch. I had an experience just yesterday of showing one of my children how to do a particular activity, and I felt that they were watching. I was doing the activity and I was actually looking at it. But when I actually looked back at them, their eyes were elsewhere, concentration wasn't there at all. So I really had to focus on inviting them to watch and not getting frustrated that they weren't looking in my direction and paying attention with their whole body. Which leads on to thinking that sometimes it's just not the right time and we have to let go of that and realize now isn't the right time. Maybe they're tired. Maybe there are many reasons why we shouldn't allow them to do this activity with us right now. And that's okay, being able to stop and let them go off and do something else or encourage them to come back to focusing on what you're doing. You can ask them to tell you the next steps of what to do next. And you can share with them funny stories about what happened to you when you were helping your parents, maybe in this exact situation. My boys like to hear the story of my disastrous first attempts at making a cake. I was the person that had to rub the butter and sugar together, and then I got to pour it into the container. Of course, I forgot to keep a little bit back of the butter and put it on the container itself so that the cake wouldn't stick to it. And yes, you guessed it, the cake was stuck hard. It's something that I don't live down in my family. They like to remind me of my cake exploits, especially now when I'm making cakes with the boys. They like to remind me, have I remembered to do the right thing? And the boys actually love that story too, because it reminds them of the fact that they know I did exactly the same thing with my family. They just love stories like that. When they're little and they're toddlers and older, they love to do things with us. Encouraging them to fetch and put things back is part of what they like to do. And this is showing them how to sort things out too. They love measuring, pouring, stirring, spraying, pushing, pulling, emptying, filling. These are all things that they naturally do and love to do. These are things that they can help us with doing as we are going about the process of doing things at home. It gets them involved. It allows them to feel as if they're doing something and that what they're doing is important, because it is. Now, lots of people try and make chores fun. And while chores can be fun, most of us know that chores are boring. And regardless if they're fun or not, they still have to be done. If we constantly remind children that chores need to be fun, then when they are bored, annoyed, or frustrated, how do we encourage them to get these chores done if they always think that chores need to be exciting and fun? It can be a real problem. So instead of focusing on them being fun, I just focus on them being just one of the things that we have to get done. Try and make not a big deal of it. But it really depends on your family and the temperament of the children that you have. For us, that seems to work, not making it a big deal. It's interesting because I was listening to the Mum podcast And I think it was the episode that was called 25 Rules for Mothers of Sons. That's a brilliant episode if you've not listened to that particular show, the Mum Podcast, where they actually talk about an article as well from the blog Team Studder, where she wrote about 25 rules for mothers of sons. Just to go off on a bit of a tangent here. And the article, they actually talk about each of the 25 rules and how that relates to them and their family. And the rules themselves are really interesting. And I use the term rules loosely, and so does the original blog. They were 25 ideas that she had that she just wanted to share. They were her ideas that she had for her family. And while many of them you might agree with, some of them you might not agree with. I think the whole idea of the article was to inspire and motivate. And so getting caught up on the semantics of the words is just, I don't think, so important. But I can see from the comments that are there, and remembering how the fallout was from it when it occurred, how many people were wanting to say, well, I don't want to do it that way, and why is she saying that you have to do these rules? And I think you have to kind of take it for what it is. And I really enjoyed the article. It's a great article to just kind of get you thinking and motivate you to do something differently. But I digress. The reason why I mentioned the Mom Podcast was the fact that one of the hosts was talking about the fact that during the summer, one of her children does the washing. They do the washing for the entire family. They do the laundry. And it made me think, I bet that child has a more thorough understanding of what laundry organizing is all about, how they have to sort the clothes, the volume of laundry that can happen with a huge group of people all in one house, the work of sorting it all out, you know, the whole system of putting it in the washer, taking it out, hanging it up or putting it in the dryer, redistributing it all out to everybody else, and operating that whole system, as long as all the things that they're doing as well. I bet that they have a really interesting feeling towards laundry for the rest of the year. And it got me thinking that I think that they mentioned it too, that they focus at specific times of the year when they can actually spend the time to focus on a specific responsibility. So for them, they were looking at laundry this year with this particular child. You can choose all different types of responsibility that you really want to change or focus on. For example, it could be something like cooking a meal. A whole meal, the complete meal, not just one part of it from scratch. It could be setting the table completely, fully, knowing where everything goes, finding all the right pieces that fit, making their bed, stripping their bed, changing all their sheets and everything that goes along with that, laundry, taking it in and out of the dryer, hanging it in the right places, filling or unloading things like the dishwasher properly. These types of things take a little time to do, not only time to show how to do it, but you need lots of time to practice doing it. And so holidays or vacations, times like that, are brilliant times to be able to focus on some of these bigger activities that you really want to go. You can take all morning to actually get on and do it. Boring to us, it's invaluable later on as they practice doing these activities. They're able to do them better and feel more confident about doing them. So that was number two. Show them how to do it. Let them or invite them to watch and allow plenty of time for repetition. Number three, stick with chores and switch them out when there is frustration. You know, we like the idea of chores. We buy and make chore charts, but within a short space of time, we're back to what we had before, with us doing the lion's share of the work and them not doing so much. Some of that is because what they do is just not good enough, or they don't finish it well. And another part I find is that we have to nag them all the time, and we feel that it's just not worth it. Why should we have to keep explaining? It's just easier for us to kind of get on and do it ourselves. And the articles actually give a few funny examples of that. Maybe we went all out and we did a huge chart and we did something amazing and we bought something on the that we can stick on the wall, and it's just not worked. And so we kind of throw the whole thing out of the window and say, ah, we don't need that. I would say instead, let's start small and add one or two things. If we've had bad experiences with chores or responsibilities, or we want to start doing something like this, is to start off small, add a chore or a few chores, and have a flexible expectation until you can decide on what your success criteria is going to be. So for example, keeping your bed tidy works for us because we understand what that means. We know for us what bed and tidy actually mean, but not so much for our child because we're not specific enough. And so depending on the age of the child, you might want to specify two or three things that they need to do to keep their bed tidy, because then at least they know what they're aiming for. There's less chance of us being able to kind of come along and derail them with, oh, you've missed this little bit and you've not done this little thing, and they feel really deflated. It's much better to be specific with two to four things, and that seems to work in most households. It's up to you how you want to share that with them. Maybe you want to do that orally, maybe it's written, maybe it's a picture, maybe it's a song. It's really up to you. You have to really find what works for your child, and that is done by trial and error. And the second part was to switch out chores to reduce frustration. Well, if you've got siblings in the home, they've often been watching and can see I could do it much better, or they are that way inclined. Maybe they are much better at organising things than the person that's been asked to organise things. And so it's going to the skills of the person, other person, really works too, because they get to share how they do things. It also encourages collaboration. They get to tell people what's going on. They get to share their expertise. Also, nothing's worse than when you have a chore that you really don't like, that you really are fed up with and don't like doing it. Knowing that you won't be stuck doing that chore forever is great. It's not your chore for life. There's something about knowing that you can change things that makes things a little brighter. So I would encourage us, if we have other children in the house, that we switch out activities and let them see that there is other things that we can do. We don't have to always be confined to the same thing. And also to look at how other people do things, because we all know that there's 101 ways to do the same thing. And some of us like to do it very narrowly, and some of us are very relaxed, but we get the same outcome. And the kids need to be able to see that, to kind of find their balance and where they are and agreeing with their personality, but also adhering to yours. All of these are really important steps in working together as a family, being able to learn what's acceptable for me, for the other members of the family, for other people outside. They're all very different ways, but all very achievable. I always like to think of the story of children that have grandparents that love to spoil them, and they know that when they go there that they will be able to eat all the sweets and things that they want. But they know when they're at their mum and dad's house that they have limits, because that's what we do at our house. But when they go to school, they have different things, and when they go to their aunts, they have different things. Children are very good at sussing out that the same one rule doesn't necessarily apply to every household and every place at the same time. They're really able to know how to do that. Now, of course, they love to work the system and try and change it in each place, but they also learn that valuable lesson that different places have different expectations of us, and that we need to be able to perform to do those different things. One way that we can stop with the nagging of the chores is to actually set expectations. Getting things done before a deadline, setting a timer, setting your expectation, maybe to do chores before a certain thing will happen. Maybe it's food, so chores have to be done before breakfast or before lunch, or straight after we come back from school or nursery, or after nap time. Maybe you want to say that you offer it as a reward. So if they do their particular chore, they get a particular thing at the end. Some people use money, some people use food. For us, that's not something that we've ever participated in, but for lots of people, they find that that works for them, to use chores as a means to earn money, or being part of the family, they're expected to do it. There's many different ways of looking at it. I'm just throwing out suggestions to give you ideas so that you can decide what will work best for your family. One thing I would really encourage you to do with chores especially is to check what they've done. Now, I don't mean walk over with a gloved white finger and see if they've dusted really well, or get out your chart of 12 points that they should have done for the chores. But I do mean check over what they've done. If we're teaching and showing them and asking them to repeat the actions that we've done, then they need the correction and they need the encouragement that goes along with that. It's really easy to have thought that you've told them 5 times how to do something, or 10 times or more to do a particular activity. You've shown them, you've sat with them, you've done it, that you can just send them off to do it. In the end, yes, you will be able to do that. You'll be able to do some random flybys, as I call them, where sometimes you go and check and sometimes you don't. But really at the beginning, you really, especially when they're very young, you need to be there to see what they're doing and give them that encouragement. Let them know what they've done is right, because it's not going to be perfect and you're not expecting perfection. And they can see that what they've done isn't exactly the same as what you've done, but you need to make sure that it's done enough. So maybe you want to be side by side and do it with them, show them something else. Encourage them. Yep, you've done it. This is exactly how you were supposed to do it. Straighten it out a bit more like this, or this is perfect. You've managed to do this exactly how I've asked you to do it. And actually use the words that you want them to understand and be able to do. It's important to be realistic about the types of chores, how many chores you get them to do, so that you can encourage this community base. You encourage the fact that this is a family unit, that we're working together to do this, and that we're not alienating one particular person because they aren't able to live up to the skills that we have here. We're a military family, and that's something that we have to kind of remember, that although we're a military family, the military isn't in our home in that sense, that we need to encourage and be positive with the skills. And we're not sergeant majors that must make sure that things are done exactly the way that we want them to be. So overlaying too many things can cause us both to fail. We as adults fail because we don't come across in the right way, and we switch them off to wanting to help and be part of the family. And then the kids fail because they realize that they can't ever do as much as they want to do. There are lots of different ways that we can do chores and raise responsible kids. Magnetic button chore charts are really popular at the moment on the fridge. Pictures of kids actually doing the chores. You can take pictures of your kids doing the chores and have them up so that they can see what's going on. You can also download pictures of cartoons and the iCan posters, things like I can put my shoes on, I can put on my socks, I can make my bed, all of those types of pictures and things that you can help them with. There's just so many ways. I would suggest just persevere and keep going until you've got something that works, and you will find that you might go through many, many different ideas of how to do chores or sticking with chores and switching them out. But find something new and find something that works, and you'll be surprised. Things that you like to do may not be something that the kids like to do. So don't discount anything just because you've seen it and you're not quite sure. I would suggest looking at somewhere like Pinterest and typing in the search chores, and you'll be inundated with all sorts of different ideas if you're looking for ideas. So that was number 3, stick with chores, switch them out when they are frustrated. Number 4, work alongside them sometimes. when you're sharing, when you're showing. There's nothing worse than telling them and instructing them about what to do, but not sharing how to do that and sharing that experience with somebody else. Because chores at work are boring. Have a chit chat, play your favorite piece of music, listen to a favorite audio story. These things can help you. When you're folding laundry or doing an activity, invite them over to help you. These aren't necessarily things that you have to do by yourself. If somebody else is doing an activity, go over and join them. Let them realize that you can do that. You can join in somebody else's activity. It goes quicker. They in turn might do that to somebody else. It's that do unto others as you want them to do to yourself kind of mentality. We'd all love it if people came over and actually, do you need some help? And you can encourage that by doing that yourself, modeling it, showing it in the home, and encouraging children to come over and do the same thing for somebody else. Because we all need encouragement sometimes. Nothing works better than that with sorting laundry, that gigantic pile that builds up. Doesn't matter what age they are, there's always a lot of clothes, aren't there? The little one and I are working on doing this exact thing at the moment, working together on putting two items on a hanger. He's got putting one item on a hanger quite well, but when the second one goes on, of course, the first one often slips off and he gets really frustrated and it can drive us both crazy, especially in a room that's kind of silent and it's just the two of us one-on-one in close proximity. It kind of lends itself to that. However, when we've got music playing, when we have an audio playing, it helps us both to be a lot calmer and a lot different with each other. So with lots of singing and a bit more distraction, we're getting there. Another thing is, when we stand together and do an activity together, there's a chance to ask questions and for normal conversation to just happen. I don't know why it happens that way, but it just does. And when you start young, doing things alongside of them, this is a pattern that they get used to. And as they grow older, they talk more and they share more. And it's a natural place for them to share personal, private thoughts that they've been thinking about all day. As you're doing the activity together, you don't have to face each other, you don't have to look into each other's eyes. You can just kind of ask questions and it be really a good place to start. So being able to find times where you can spend that time together really works. So that was number four, working alongside of them sometimes. Number five, start early. It's much easier to share activities as the family grows with you. If you start when they're young, that they realize that this is just the family way. This is just how we do things. As new siblings come along, they look forward to new activities that they can do because they realize that they're growing out of activities that they're doing. I still ask them to do all different types of activities, so no activity is beneath them. Yeah, I don't want children thinking that I don't do that activity anymore, I'm not a baby, because we all need to know how to do all the different activities. But families working together make it easier to understand about burdens, because they start to talk about it, don't you? You start to say things like, I don't know how I'm going to get all these things done. I've got to do this and I've got to do my homework. I've got this club I need to do. I've got this paper to write. And in that exasperation, the rest of your family can help you with ideas about what you can do. I'll help you with this. Don't worry about that. We'll knock this out together. They can help clarify those types of things, and that really helps children too. When you share the things that are happening, not in a burdensome way, as in I can't cope, I can't help, but in a way that to help them understand that this is a process, we all have to think through these things, it helps them to be able to organize and start thinking about their lives. You can ask them things. You know, we're going to nursery, you're going to nursery this morning, we need to make your bed, you need to clean your teeth, and we need to finish our breakfast. When are we going to get those done? How are we going to get those done together? And then they start to realize that they don't have a lot of time, and how am I going to get all these things done? Failing to pick up their toys and the consequence of not doing that is a small thing right now. not being organized, we can tidy it away, or there's a consequence for us picking up the toy. But as it moves further on into, as they get older, forgetting their homework to take to school, or further still, not completing a project because of bad time management can cause your company to lose money, or for you to perhaps lose your job. So these consequences and the repercussions, although they seem small and you think, it's no bother for me to just kind of pick up the slack, these are ripe grounds for learning. It's a brilliant time to be able to share with them how our consequences, our actions have consequences. So start early and start sharing activities and ideas with them. We've been a little lax with our last one, the little one, and he's only now just graduating to emptying the cutlery. And the middle one has moved onwards too. It's quite interesting, they have a little bit of nostalgia, as the middle one wants to really show the little one how to do things. The little one is very keen on doing it just his way. He doesn't need anybody to show him how to do it. And the middle one wants to rearrange the cutlery and kind of do it a little differently. But he now has a different job that he's doing, although he wants to help his little brother. So it's really interesting how they're learning the dynamics of working together and knowing when to step in and when not to do something. These are all life skills that we're teaching, raising responsible kids. Number 6, buy less and find a way to reduce your toys and your clothes compulsions. And look at what you want and what you need and your desires. When I look back at that first article in the Boston Globe, I was really struck by a comment that was written there. They said, in the material saturation mountains of possession chapter, they report that our country has 3.1% of the world's kids. And that country that they were talking about was the United States. And 40% of the little tykes' easy score basketball hoops and other toys. We are completely overrun with toys. I don't know if you caught that statistic, 40% of those basketball hoops and other toys they would suggest are in this one country. Why is that? Now, I think that high percentage of toys doesn't just limit the one country. I think lots of countries have that particular problem and lots of people have that particular problem. But it's not something that we can just pat ourselves on the back and say, well, that's not me, I don't have to worry. I think that that's something that kind of creeps up on you if you're not careful and you don't account for that happening. We wake up and we find that we're kind of living in a toy shop. Presents happen before day one, before the kids come, we start to get presents from well-meaning friends and well-wishers. Some of them are really great. You're really glad you didn't know about this particular brand or this particular thing, and you're really happy that you've got it. Some of them, not so much. And we have this love relationship of things that are given to us, clothes, the amount of clothes that just kind of come in as presents, especially with newborns. And then we have to store all of this stuff, because of course there's going to be further siblings perhaps that are coming along. Some of them were expensive, so you want to save them and sell them on or give them to friends or family or other people. So where do you put all this stuff? You have to put them in containers and suck out the air in those special bag things, and you have to pile them in certain places. And our rooms just become storage containers of all of this stuff. We have garages full of it, lofts full of it, all sorts of places. Each present has a value, and it's really hard to get rid of all this stuff that comes in. Now, I'm talking from personal experience. It happens to me too. There's usually one of you in the family who's like this, and that's me and my family. Things come in and I like it and I go, oh, I really want to keep it. And we keep it and we keep it and we keep it. The kids don't see the value in it as much because we rotate our toys. New things come in, they don't necessarily remember. the stuff, the special stuff, where it comes from. But I don't know, I just seem to remember who bought it, where we bought it, how they played with it, and we've got all these memories that are attached to it. And I find this particular part really difficult. But if you remember from a previous interview when Dot Mail was on, she talked about how we could get rid of some of these toys and the importance of actually doing that. Having 3 or 4 toys out would be the ideal. And I know that that sounds really crazy, but if you actually listen to that interview, you will understand a lot more about it. Something about too much choice being crippling, and they don't play with anything when there's too many choices. We have to really get quite radical about our toys and clothes. Do we really need to be washing every day? Do we really need so many clothes? Imagine what we could do with the extra money saved from these extra toys and extra clothes that we're buying all the time. If we budgeted for toys and clothes, if we budgeted for toys and clothes in a way that let us understand that we only are going to get toys and clothes at this particular time. Okay, we need a little flexibility, but we didn't just kind of let our money run out of our hands and buy all of these things. You never know. You could get that holiday you've always wanted. I don't know, the diamond ring. Who knows? Anything. I think as parents, our self-control can get out of hand too, because we let our wants be our needs, and our needs get pushed further and further down. It's part of the self-control message that we need to share with our kids too. It's not always easy, but it's something we should keep trying to address, even when we stink at it. And like I said, I'm talking from personal opinion. I'm talking from personal experience here. Not all aspects of our lives will run smoothly, but we can focus on a few things at a time. So when was the last time that you actually looked at your play space? Looked at all those toys that you have. You looked at that wardrobe and saw all of those clothes that you have there. Dot Mail talks about simplifying all of that in show number 89, what to consider when developing a creative play space. Number 7, declutter. You have it, get rid of it. If you look at your home, what room would you most like to declutter right now? Do you annually declutter, or do you have a system of decluttering where you go through things? Things come through our doors all the time, from shopping, from birthdays, from gifts, from all sorts of places, but not a lot of things go back out the way that they should do. I haven't been doing decluttering hardly at all, and it shows. I have years and years of stuff to go through, boxes and boxes of things, and it can be really overwhelming. But I'm taking the little by little approach and using that system to attack little things at a time, because it will work over time, and I see that it's working over time, and it feels so much better to be able to do that. I don't have to be an extremist and get rid of everything. I don't have to be a minimalist where there's just hardly anything there, because for me that would make me very uncomfortable. But with too much stuff, you can't see what you really have. And for children, this is a really important aspect of being responsible, is learning how to manage the things that they have, not kind of move them around their room and have this kind of carpet of toys and stuff that just kind of creep around the house, but actually learn how to put things in the right places, put things in the bin, make sure that things that are broken are sorted through, giving things away, sharing things with other people, learning how to do this. I realize that I haven't done a very good job of showing my children how to do that, and I want to be able to do that better, so I have to focus on it and actually think of how to get those things done. Christmas and birthdays are good times to be able to do that, and any holiday season where you know that there'll be presents that come in abundance. Sometimes summers are good times for doing that too, because you know that it's a good time to be able to do that. For some people it's not, because the children are all home and it would just make it a terrible time. It's better when they are away for good chunks of time, that you can get things done without them being there. I would say institute regular donate boxes and totes around the house. I've seen it work in wardrobes where when things are finished, too big, to go to the next sibling or too small for you to wear, things that you're not wearing very much, these can all go into the donate boxes. Gently used toys that you want to give to somebody else, toys that you don't like anymore, or toys that don't fit with your family, or unwanted gifts, all of these things can go to these places. And please, please, please go take your children with you when you're dropping them off. It's a bit like when you let children play with toys and then they go straight to bed and they don't see who picks up the toys. They just come down the next day and they make a mess. And then you say, clean up your toys. How do they know how to clean up their toys if they didn't see how to do it? We have to show them how to pick up the toys, where to put them, how to do it. It's the same with when you are decluttering your house and things are going somewhere else. It's really nice for them to know how their toys, their clothes are helping other people, other children, and for them to see where these things go and what actually happens. It's kind of the missing link that sometimes happens in our efficiency to get things done quickly. We don't have to do it with every single thing, but it's always good for them to see where these things go and how they happen. And that sometimes the year that can be really difficult for them to do because we're just too busy and we do just have to be efficient. But there are other times when we can take the time to take that bag of clothes or toys to a place where they can see them being really well used. So that was number 7. Declutter, you have it, get rid of it. You know, it's really easy to see these articles that I've been talking about in the Boston Globe and the New Yorker and the podcasts that I've mentioned, like the Manic Mummies and the Mum podcast, and to opt out of them, to kind of think, you know, none of those things kind of apply to me. I'm not that extreme. I'm not that way. I can pat myself on the back. You know, reality TV shows often give us that pleasure to pat myself on the back and say, I'm not like that. Thank goodness. But what these articles for me really did was let me cast a clear eye over what I'm doing to raise a playful, responsible little person. It gave me ideas of how am I encouraging and discouraging our everyday rhythms and routines at home? In 5 or 10 years' time, will I be doing the lion's share of the work and have children who expect it all because I didn't focus on sharing how to be responsible, how to be part of the family? We can work on a few things. We can work on a few of these things. And we can come up with plenty of new ideas for ourselves. I know that these 7 are not a complete list. And I'm sure while you were listening, you were thinking of ideas that you had that were much better. Things that you know in your family that you know that really work. You've been thinking about how you intentionally are going to raise a responsible child in your heart. Many of you have been touched by some of the things that have been said. And you know that you could further improve what you're doing and move a step further in the right direction. For me, I've just shared personally how decluttering and collecting things is my bugbear. After moving around so much, I have a ton of things that I really need to do more about. I've made the decision to do it, and publicly I've said it now, so I'm kind of accountable for that. So if you see me around on Twitter, at Play Activities, or on Facebook, that's Raising Playful Tots, ask me how it's going. I do need a prod and a push every now and again to declutter and get rid of stuff that keeps coming in through that front door. Ask me how many bags have I done this month, or what am I working on? And you know, you share with us and share with all of us what you want to do. How do you want to raise a playful tot? How do you want to raise a responsible playful tot? What do you want to work on? Choose any of the 7, or maybe you've got something that's come up yourself that you have decided that you want to work on. Maybe it's a chore chart that you've seen that you want to do, an area that you want to focus on. You want to look at something and think, I want to do that. Share them publicly. Let's be accountable with each other. Put it on Facebook and link to us on Raising Playful Tots, or come to the Facebook page there and share it. tweet me and let me know, or let your followers know what you're doing or what you would like to do. Or leave a message on the show notes by going to raisingplayfultots.com/106 and share what you would like to do there. Thanks for listening to the show today as we've been talking about ideas about raising responsible kids based on those two articles. If you've enjoyed the show or any of the other shows that we've had, you can reach out to me directly using info@raisingplayfultots.com. That's I-N-F-O. Or leave a review for us on iTunes by following the short link raisingplayfultots.com/iTunes page, and that will take you straight to the Raising Playful Tots page. Thank you. All the best for a playful week and the motivation to get going on that next step of raising a playful tot. I'll be back with you next week with an interview. Until then, you've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 106. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye!